Question number 16726, Mr. H. Bell, reel 5.
Mr. Bell, reel 5. You went to a camp in South Africa, Mr. Bell, for a short while. What were you doing there?
Well, the reason we went to the camp was we actually were not going to be allowed to land in Cape Town because there had been a previous Australian troop ship come through and then wrecked the place. So we were just allowed for the half day there, and then we went to this camp just to keep us out of the road. We didn't bother to do anything, we were just there. And I don't remember much about it at all, except it was just filling in time with walks and a bit of Morse code practice and so on. Nothing, just filling time in. And then we went off aboard the ship again, and we left the convoy. It was a big ship, 22,000 tonner and fast. And we left the convoy and went off on our own to India. The decks were trembling, with the ship was flat out, and the decks were trembling all the time with the power of the engines. So we landed in Bombay.
What was your first impressions of India?
Well, the gateway of India was the first thing we saw, really. First impressions. Noise. Smell. I don't know which one is the most. Noise and smell, definitely. And the fact that when we got ashore, we were accosted continually by little boys wanting to flog their sisters and begging for pennies and annas. We were, of course, obviously, new boys. We had the old pith helmet on, which they wore a century ago, and we had Bombay bloomers. Bombay bloomers were a peculiar sort of a cross between trousers and shorts. They buttoned up at the thighs during the day, giving you a double thickness of shorts, and then they dangled down nearly to your ankles. And of course, they widened out like a sailor's trousers because they had to go over the thigh. they were most terrible looking things. Terrible looking things. I was looking at a picture the other day of somebody who had them on, and they were awful. So that was it. The noise, the confusion, the noise was terrible. Everybody shouting, you know. Nobody talks in India, everybody shouts.
When you landed, what did you do then?
Oh, you're asking something now, aren't you? We to the best of my memory, we didn't stay there at all. I just get the impression that we went straight out on a troop train, straight out to the barracks.
Where were the barracks? Oh,
yes, we went out, to the best of my memory, straight on the troop train and out to Ahmednugger. It stood for...
What date would this be?
That would be June 42. It was an old either cavalry barracks or something of that type. It was a widespread thing, right? Single-story, thatched, bamboo lattice-work buildings, the bottom half brick, with beaten earth floor, and the tree rats running around. The tree rats were left to run around because they dug out the worms and so on from the woodwork and stopped the decay in the wood. But it was... Well, sitting on your bed, and all of a sudden you get covered with a shower of sawdust. But anyway, they were very, very sparse. Very, very sparse. The beds were charpoys, which are a rough wooden frame with a rope mattress. And as a sort of a mat affair, which laid on there, and then your blankets on top. There was no springing. Very sparse, very, very sparse. And as I say, the well, really laid out with a lot of space in between the buildings.
Well, how many men would there be in a particular one particular room?
30. Held a platoon.
Did you have the natives helping a great deal with the things that you would have had to do in England, keeping it clean and so on?
No. We had a billet orderly. We did have a bearer who used to go and fetch the tea and do odd jobs, but that's all he did do. No, we had to keep the place clean ourselves.
Were there any problems? You've mentioned the tree rats, bed bugs, that kind of thing. Were those a problem to you?
Yes. Yes, the bugs, and when you put your mosquito net down, you had to go all over it and crack them with your thumbnails. So that after a week or two, your nice clean mosquito net was a mass of little splashes of blood. Yeah, but bugs are a real menace out there. They really thrive.
And did they get onto your body? Was that a problem?
Not through the day, no. They just seemed to come out at night. And I say, they got on the inside of the net, so we just had to go all over the net at night before we went to sleep and before we took the edges into the mattress.
There was no way that you had no way of killing them off other than catching them and squeezing them?
No. I remember one time we were in a tented camp and we had to unroll the walls of the tent down for some reason. And when we unrolled the walls, it was encrusted with bugs. Absolutely millions of them, encrusted with them. India is a land of bugs and other things.
What was the food like that you were getting?
Terrible. I got the impression that they were not expecting us. That's the impression I got, because there was nothing for us at all. We were really short of food. We were, I wouldn't say starving, but not far from it. What we did get was inedible. There was no refrigeration or anything, so the meat, the carcass used to come up steaming from a slaughterhouse. And you just can't eat meat like that. You can't get your teeth through it, you know. And we used to I've stolen onions from the cookhouse because I was that hungry. Stolen onions, of all things, and the Indian onions are very hot onions. The food was really, really bad.
Did this cause problems? I'm thinking in terms of discipline, that kind of thing.
No. Not that. No.
We were
well disciplined. The Stegmatan was a good mob. A good, generally contented and happy mob.
Sanitation, what was it like in the camp?
I don't... Not a thing I remember very well. I don't remember it. I don't remember it.
But the ablutions and the toilets...
The ablutions and toilets. We had showers and... There must have been toilets when we didn't. It wasn't the dugout that we used when we were out in the wilds. There must have been, but I don't remember them.
Drinking water, was it clean and plentiful?
Slightly chlorinated. There was no shortage. No, there's no shortage of drinking water.
And the camp, you say, was quite a large one?
Quite large, yes. Well, it took the whole battalion. Very, very much spread out. A big, big parade ground in the middle. Um, nothing exciting about it at all. It was right out in the wilds. Quite a distance from Ahmednugger itself. Single road. I remember the road, the only life you ever saw were bullock wagons used to come lumbering past through the night generally. And we did something, and I was involved, which really, looking back on, I was ashamed of. The drivers of these bullock wagons, which used to travel at walking speed, you know, they used to sleep. It was, you know, it was just a dirt road, and they used to lumber down there, and the driver used to go to sleep on the front of his wagon. And we used to go around and gently turn the bullocks round while he was asleep, gently turn them round and send them back the way they'd come. Off they'd go. It's a horrible thing to do, but that was entertainment. There was also a camp. I don't know what the camp was. Some of the camp workers, some of the barrack workers, would be there, I suppose. But it used to be terrible. The signal platoon had this basher on the edge of the camp, next to the road, and the noise was what we used to call ramsammies nearly every night, and the women wore bells around their ankles, and there was drums being bashed and stamping up and down, and dogs howling. It was terrible, you know, getting to sleep. He eventually did, but it was an awful noise, and he could do nothing about it. There was dogs howling across the road, and I got a big stick, and I went out and across the road, and then all of a sudden I heard all this growling, and I could see these shapes creeping. So I did the cowardly thing and retreated rapidly back to the barracks.
What impression were you getting of the Indian?
Poverty. Noisy. They don't talk, they shout at each other. There was no unfriendliness. There was just nothing between us at all. They were just there, and that was it. All the time I was in India, that was it, excepting for occasions which I'll tell you about later on.
Had you been warned, either on the boat as you were about to arrive or afterwards, about anything that you particularly had to be careful of?
No. Never hit an Indian in the stomach. Their spleen is a chronic swollen spleen with malaria, and if you hit them in the stomach, it bursts. Kick them up the backside, we're told. Don't hit them in the stomach, kick them up the backside. That was it. There was a peculiar atmosphere. They didn't like us. It showed, and they couldn't do anything about it, and that showed as well. They avoided us. They did avoid us. We did quite a lot for them at times. There was a famine, a rice famine, and we knew that the godowns, had big shanties, were packed with rice from the merchants who were holding back and keeping the price up. And some of our fellows went out and unloaded that rice and took it out of the village and put it in the middle of the square, left it and disappeared, you know. And we gave up having rice for ourselves as a pudding. We gave up rice to let it go to the villagers. Terrible poverty. Terrible.
The climate, was that particularly good, or did you suffer from it in any way?
We suffered badly at first, and I suppose we should have been taking salt tablets, but apparently there mustn't have been any, because we had a parade every morning, and so a pint of salt water. They paraded us in ranks and made you drink this pint. You just have to drink it. Not very pleasant. I think that there must have been a short. Everything was in short supply. There was nothing for us at all. Oh, the bread. The bread was atrocious. It was supposed to be white bread, but it looked like wholemeal. There were that many. What they call them? The things they get in the bread?
Weevils.
It looked like wholemeal bread. And it was patches of doughy bread and a bit of dry bread and all these weevils, and it used to go mouldy and bitter, sour. The bread was terrible. Terrible. It wasn't fit to eat.
Was the food supplies coming through Indian contractors?
Yes, a fella called Wazirali ran the canteen and supplies, yeah.
So the quality of food was basically Indian provided. It wasn't coming direct through the army itself.
No. It didn't seem to be, anyway. I couldn't imagine the army supplying us with stuff like that, no.
Were there diseases that you had to protect yourself against?
Oh, pardon?
Diseases. Did you have to protect yourself against those?
Well, we had to cover ourselves up at night. But there were Bombay bloomers and shirt sleeves down, and we'll be if they were very, very strict. You were in charge if you didn't do it. If you went outside of the hut through the day without a hat on, you were on a charge. If you went outside, you had to have a hat on. This was going back to the old days. It changed considerably, you know, rapidly after we'd been there for a while. It was going back to the old pre-war days when these precautions were really necessary. Because shortly after we got there, we were encouraged to go out. We could go out and do parades, stripped to the waist, or with a shirt on, but not with a vest on. You were either stripped to the waist, or you had shorts and shirt.
Some men must have found it very difficult to guard against
these people with white skin. These people with white skins and so on. Yes. And my mate Flacker Hart, who was ginger, had a white skin, you know, and he couldn't stand his son at all.
Malaria. Did you have to take precautions against that?
Just covering up at night.
Weren't taking any.
No tablets.
No tablets.
No, it wasn't a malarial place. There was no water, you know, no ponds. Water came from wells. So I remember when I was out for a bit of a walk. And I saw this thing, and there's a well with a bullock pulling a big bucket up over a roller and dipping it out and back and forwards all day long, dipping it out. When we went on a scheme, the water was always inspected the day before, and I went out with the sergeant, and he was going to chlorinate the water, and he tested it, oh yes, so many tablets, we'll double that just to make sure. So the water we got was always dreadfully chlorinated, and it's horrible tasted, it's really horrible. The tea tasted of chlorine. And,
what training were you doing at Ahmednagar?
Well, believe it or not, we were in the assault division. But we didn't have any boats, did we? And we were quite a long way inland. So, army style, we constructed boats out of rocks painted white. Whitewashed rocks in the shape of an assault craft. And we did in and out of that on board and then unloading day after day. In the heat of the sun, with our gas capes over our head, so we couldn't see to imitate the night landing. And we did that. We were perfect at getting in and out of assault craft. Typical army, isn't it? Typical army. We did make trips to a reservoir called Cataguasla. A big reservoir it was, and there were boats there. We had Fleming boats, Fleming life boats, which were, I'm not going to give you the word, there's a rude word for them, but they were driven by levers, which you hold backwards and forwards, and it drove a propeller at the back. And we used to have, by courtesy of the officers, who vied with each other and having the best platoon, we used to have races with these Fleming life craft, life boats. Along the reservoir.
And what exactly was the training?
There was also, what amused me was, there was a big notice up at the entrance of the reservoir. Bathing was prohibited because there was some form of worm or other in the water. You know. Well, we were in and out of that water, jumping in and out of the lake, but that's all it wouldn't matter about whether we got any. I don't know. I've forgotten what they were now, but it was something that got into the blood, you know, through the skin. But I don't know what it was, but it didn't apply to the army.
Your own signal platoon, what training were you getting?
Oh, well, something that we had never been able to do. And I took them and I enjoyed it very much. That was the heliograph. That was a heli. I loved it. Of all the signalling instruments I've used, I love the heliograph.
How does it work?
It's a mirror, rather like a shaving mirror, a beautiful mirror, which has it's on a tripod, and it's mounted vertically. Facing the other station, and facing the sun, of course, wherever possible. And there's a black, an unsilvered spot in the middle of the mirror. In front of that is a white plastic tab, which had a vertical black markup and two cross strokes. And there was a trigger which moved the mirror at a vertical pivot, and it was also a little turn screw on the side which pivoted around, so you could follow the sun all the time. And it's amazing how fast the sun moves. You're on the move constantly, keeping the little unsilvered dot, which the mirror was shining on this little white tab, and the little unsilvered dot had to be kept on the cross where the lines crossed. So you had to be operating it all the time, sideways and vertically. It sounds difficult, but it wasn't that. You get used to it. And I've sent the message 15 miles with that. You could read it with your eyes shut. It's a blinding light, an absolute blinding light. When you shut your eyes, It's a red flash or a red dot. I loved operating it with a good operator at the other end. It was amazing how fast you could send. An amusing incident. After we came back from the Arakan, which I'll tell you about later, we got some reinforcements, fresh from Blighty, pink skinned and. And I took five of them out on a heliograph exercise after they'd been instructed, and I was about 10 miles away from the camp, And I gave him a message to send, and I got under the bush and rested, let them do the work. And all of a sudden, one of them came running up. Corporal, he says, "Andy, there's a big caterpillar crawled up on his chest, and he's knocked it off, and it's left all its legs stuck in his chest." Well, it wasn't. It was a centipede, wasn't it? You know. And he shouldn't have knocked it off. He should have knocked it off the way it was going. The legs are hooked backwards. Knocking it off the way it did, it drove them in, and within an hour, he was punch drunk. You'd think he had too much to drink. So I helioed back to the camp, I see, and got a truck out to get him in, because he was staggering. that's the only instance I have of anything like that happening to any of the fellas.
Were there any
Nobody
accidents?
Got bitten or anything.
There were no accidents with men at all? Were there any accidents at all at this stage where you meet?
No. Oh, we lost, the first person we lost was a sergeant. I can't think of his name now. Very well-legged he was, though. And we were out on a stunt at night. Now, the Indian troops had what they call monsoon capes, if it was wet. We just used our gas capes, that's all we had, was typical. We just had gas capes, and he was out, and he fell down a well. He fell down a well with his gas cape on, and of course he was helpless. When he was drowned. I think that's the only one we ever lost in an accident. Yeah, just it's the only one we ever lost.
What routine duties were you involved in? The kind of thing that signallers are doing regularly.
Constant Morse reading. Flag drill. Morse flag and semaphore. And then, of course, the companies were going out on manoeuvres. And there was always a detachment of signallers went with them. So we were constantly in and out, you know. Never nothing to do, I promise you. It was always a full day. It was difficult at first because of the heat and the fact that we wore steel helmets. A lot of troops out there wore bush hats or pill helmets, but we wore our steel helmets all the time, and they were like little ovens on your head. Terrible, but that's the way it was. We wore steel hats all the time on manoeuvres and in action.
Had you received any up to date signalling equipment such as radio and telephone?
We had radio before we went out to India. It was the 48 set, which was a man pack set, 28 pounds in weight, and which was quite efficient. In India, because India is normally very flat, and of course they transmit quite well. We used to hold competitions as to how far we could signal from, you know, radio from. It was quite good in India, quite in practice. As you said, we also practiced laying lines out and telephone lines out and so on. Nothing particular. We were kept busy all the time.
Had there been any changes in the officers? Was it the same battalion commander?
Well, Colonel Veer didn't go out with us. We had a change. We had another. The colonel. When we first went down was Colonel Stobart, but he left shortly afterwards, I don't know why, and we got a Colonel Theobalds, who was a tall martinet, very, very strict, very, very strict fella. I can't tell you much about him, because as a Lance Corporal, I didn't have much to do with him. he was a god in the distance.
Your own signal officer was the same?
Well, our own signal officer was still Captain West, who was very likeable, and we got along well together. He used to take us out at night and tell us how to read the stars, and he was interested in this all the time. He was nice to get along with. He was not a disciplinarian either. The Singles were all intelligent fellows, so they didn't need a strict discipline. So they were all interested in the job, and that was it.